First off, I wanted to introduce myself. She already told you my name is Tracy Stafford, and I actually have a colleague of mine with me today, Maren Angelotti, and we do consulting business together for children with learning differences, and she's here to see this aspect of what I do. What I wanted to first start out was to give you guys a little bit of background information as to who I am and how I ended up speaking to you guys. First off, my name, like I said, is Tracy Stafford. First and foremost, I'm a Christian, and that makes me royalty, so that's where you get my purple paper, but also means that I don't have to be perfect, and I really like that. I'm a wife, a mom of three. I got to add mother-in-law to that list this year. That was kind of different. I'm a daughter-in-law, a friend, a teacher, a tutor, a consultant, a small business owner. I'm an adult with dyslexia and ADD, and I hope I am a rainbow in a cloud for a few people, and I can't really explain that further until Dina comes back, because I do want to talk a little bit about rainbows and clouds. I first met Ms. Long 3 years ago when she brought her son, Jonah. I don't know if any of you guys have met Jonah, to Shelton for testing and for some intensive tutoring. Jonah gave me lots and lots and lots of his time, and he really didn't want to be there. And he would give Miss Long a really, really, really hard time. But by the time I got through with him, he was exhausted, and he had worked very hard. And a friendship had developed between both Jonah and Dina and I, much to his chagrin, because there were times when he would rather we weren't friends. A week ago, I had an opportunity to spend an evening with Maya Angelou in New York City. And it was a very incredible evening. And during that evening, she talked about courage and rainbows. And you guys know what God's promise is with the rainbow. Who can tell me what God's promise is for the rainbow? Very good. Now, when you see a rainbow, what's the sky normally look like outside? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Yeah. Blue and clear. If you ever travel to Hawaii, you'll see rainbows sometimes in the mists of the waterfalls, and the clouds will lower down, and you will see rainbows in the clouds, and it doesn't happen very often. But when you do, it is a very, very beautiful and unique sight, and it reminds us that God sends us rainbows every day, and he sends them in the form of the people that are in our lives. And I have two rainbows here with me today. One of them is Dina, and I thank her very much for the opportunity, and I appreciate everything that she's done as a friend. And I have Maren, who also gets a rainbow today. They didn't know I was going to give them a rainbow today. If you look on my list of who I am and what I am and what I am not, you'll see that, you know, so I was a Christian. I'm a wife, mom of three. I have two daughters and one son. Two of my children have moderate to severe learning differences. I am a mother-in-law to Ryan. That was interesting and new this year, but he's a Christian and he's doing good. I try to be a good friend. My passion is teaching. I love to teach. A lot of times I will tutor children who fall through the cracks in the public school. I especially tutor reading and math, because I didn't think that I could learn math until I was 35 years old. As a matter of fact, I thought math was the most complicated foreign language I had ever taken, and decided at age 35 that I really liked math. I'm a consultant. I work with parents of children with learning differences, and I also consult on small groups like you guys and show you how to make it through college without being swamped in debt and how to set a lifelong pattern of staying debt-free. I'm a small business owner. We have a business called Meeting of Different Minds, which Maren is a partner in. My greatest challenge and my greatest struggle is being an adult with dyslexia and ADD. When I stand up here and talk to you guys, understand that everyone, all of the clouds that are behind me that have been important in my life, whether they knew they were important, whether I ever told them or not, are standing up here with me. So there's lots and lots of rainbows and clouds up here. The information that I'm going to give you today for some of you is going to be a true lifesaver, and one or two of you are going to latch onto it and say, oh, wow, this is awesome. For the rest of you, I'm giving you a piece of candy. It's a lifesaver. Enjoy it while I sit up here and talk to you for a few minutes. It'll give you something to do and keep you awake. And if you need to stay awake, get the blue ones. They keep you awake better. As she mentioned, as Ms. Long mentioned, I have gone through a lot of the training with Dave Ramsey. He's author of the book Financial Peace. He's author of the Financial Peace talk show that's on the talk radio station out here. He is a financial consultant to millions, and he's one of the rainbows in my clouds. Just like you guys, I'm human, and I make lots of mistakes. And just like millions of others, my husband and I made some very common, costly financial errors. And much of that was my responsibility. Kind of hard to believe, isn't it? It's really hard to admit, too, because when you think about where I put our family in debt, a large part of my family's financial crisis was directly related to my ADD, which, as I stated earlier, is my biggest challenge, but also my greatest blessing. The challenge with being ADD is the impulsive side of my nature. And it's led me to make some costly financial decisions, which led to, of course, stress at home, in the marriage, and at work. The positive side of ADD is that I can multitask at anything. I can have about 100 things going on at once, which is a good thing, because once you create a financial mess, it takes a lot of energy to get out of it. I hope to help you guys avoid having to go through all of that. Being ADD also allows me to have the energy and courage to get up here and share what we went through as a family with you guys. When I first heard about financial peace, I was 35 years old and at the end of my rope. I had just graduated from college. I was one of those that started, stop, started, stop, started, stop. So, you know, you start financial aid, you start, stop. You start financial aid, you stop. Not a real good financial move. Married, had 3 children, and at 35 years old, had amassed a staggering $250,000 worth of debt. It's $250,000. That's an awful lot of debt to be carrying around. Now, this included a house, car, student loan, credit card. But when you look at the numbers, that's an awful lot of debt, and it's a scary place to be. And each month it seemed like it was the same thing. Let me rob Peter to pay Paul. And I knew there had to be a better way. And that's what I'm here to talk to you guys about today. Personal finance is only about 10% book smart. The rest of it, 90%, self-control. What I'd like to share with you today is how to set up a basic budget, how to eliminate debt if you indeed already have some debt, the need for an emergency fund, and I'm going to teach you how to pay cash for a car so that you don't have to have a car note each month. Now, if you look at the Bible, Proverbs 22, verse 7 says the borrower is slave to the lender. Okay? In reality, that means if you have debt and you're in a bad job, say you're working for someone and they start doing something that is not ethical, but they're paying you a really good salary, and you can't walk away because you have to have that paycheck, then you're in bondage to your employer, and you're in bondage to debt. And that's not a good place to be. If you're already in bondage, I hope that what I share with you today will help you to take the first steps towards breaking the financial chains that bind you. If those of you who are out there who are in denial of Proverbs 22:7, much like I was, I've learned over the years that it doesn't matter how hard you work, how positive you think, when you do stupid things, they will catch up with you and tackle you, and it hurts. Having said all that, let's learn how to break the ties that bind us. The very first thing that you guys have to do, how many of you in here have a checkbook? How many of you have balanced it this month? How many of you have balanced it this year? How many of you have ever balanced it? Okay, you gotta balance your checkbook, guys. It's crucial. And you need to do it. It tells you where you are financially. That's your first step. Big hint. If you're writing rubber checks, even if they're accidental, that's a big sign of crisis. If you balance your checkbook and get on a budget, you can get out of living in that crisis cycle. How many of you have an ATM or debit card? How many of you use it all the time? How many of you ever forget to write it down in your checkbook? Put your ATM card away. It's real good for impulsive buys. Put it away. Don't take it everywhere with you go when you go somewhere, especially if you're on a budget. Until you have some self-control, then it's okay to carry it. ATM cards are an invitation to Impulse City. If you have any ADD at all, ATM cards, debit cards, credit cards can be very dangerous things. The third step is to develop a budget that can account for every dollar that comes into your household, including the dollars that we allot for blowing, because you have to have some money just to blow that you don't have to be held accountable to anyone for. It's your money to do with what you want to do with. Everybody has to have the money that you can blow. I gave you a budget to look at, and it's very simple once I show you how to do it. You try and include every possible expense that you can think of, which is pretty much what the budget in front of you has done. And understand that every month, your budget's going to be a little bit different. You will not have the same expenses month in and month out. So be prepared to do a budget every month. It gets easier. The first 3 months are torture, but it gets a lot easier. Everyone have your budgets? Okay. Take a look at your budget, and you see at the very beginning, the very first thing it says is charitable gifts. That's our gifts back to God. Okay? Then you see savings. And on there, the very first thing is an emergency fund. An emergency fund is a certain amount of money that you put aside each month in case of an emergency. Okay? If you don't have an emergency fund and you do have a Visa card, Visa is going to catch the slack and they're going to charge you dearly for it. What you want to do is establish an emergency fund with a minimum of $1,000 in it. Okay? I don't care if you can't put $10 or $15 a month in that emergency fund. For students, some of you are on a very, very limited income. I'll often tell students, at least get $500 in there, okay? The goal is to get 3 to 6 months of your debts or your expenses in that emergency fund. That way, if you find yourself in a position where you're at a job and it's bad and you need to walk away, you've got 3 to 6 months to find another job, and you're not bound in a really bad job. Or if you get sick and you need to take off time, you've got 3 to 6 months in savings. How many of you guys live off campus? How many of you work? Anybody married in here? Okay. Housing. You have to take care of this first page first. These are pretty much your essentials. It covers your savings, your housing, utilities, food, and transportation. Okay? Where the subtotal line is, you write down what those expenses are. Okay? How much is your house note? Hopefully, for most of you guys, that doesn't apply right now. If it does, write down your rent, your house note, and it breaks it down. If your homeowners and taxes are escrowed in, then you don't have to put that down. But if you're a homeowner, or even if you're in an apartment and you're making a furniture payment to errands, rooms to go, you're going to put that in there right now, because that's a note. It says furniture replacement, but if you're paying a note right now and you got to have that bed to sleep on, put it in your housing fund, okay? Otherwise, you're going to be on the blow-up mattress on the floor. Utilities, you got to pay them. You don't pay them, what happens? What happens if you don't pay your power bill? They turn it off, okay? These are the you gotta's. Groceries, you gotta. Restaurants, not a you gotta, but it's nice to be able to do if you can budget it in. Car payments. How many of you in here have car payments? How many of you have a car payment? Okay. If you don't pay your car, they come get it. But cars break down, tires wear out, and you have to maintain them. So you can see on this form, we've put in there a place for maintenance. Now because I do a lot of miles, probably about every 2 months, I take my car and I have the oil changed and I have it serviced. When I do that, it costs me about $75 at the Subaru dealership. So each month, I budget in $35. Although I only pay it every other month, I budget it in as a monthly expense, okay? We have a slush fund, a secondary fund, and I'll move stuff over for things that don't come due every month. I pay car insurance. Right now, it's cheaper for me to pay it monthly, so it's on a monthly installment. If you pay your insurance and you only pay it every 3 or 6 months, budget it for a monthly expense so that you'll know how much you need each month. And then you can transfer that over into your other account. You'll have a second checking account that draws interest. And when those monthly, quarterly bills come due, you write it out of that account, and it's there because you're budgeting for it on a monthly basis. Same thing with your car tag, which in Texas, car tags are not bad. I think the most they are on a renewal is $50. If you live in Mississippi, car tag's about $700 every year. So that's a big thing that we had to budget for when we lived in Mississippi. But if you put it in each month and then transfer it into your secondary account, at the end of that year, it's very, very, very easy to just write that check and not have to say, oh, I've got a car tag due this month. What am I going to do? Okay. When you do that, then you add up all your totals and put it at the bottom of page one. And these are you got to pay, you got to have. If you flip it over to page two, you need to put in a budget for clothing. Clothes do wear out. I don't care if it's only $5 a month, whatever. You need to budget something for clothing replacement. I've gotten lazy. I send lots of stuff to the dry cleaners, okay? My husband and I both work. We work long hours. So for me, we budget about $15 to $20 a week, depending on what our schedule looks like, for dry cleaning. Okay, that may seem a lot because you guys are still in jeans and t-shirts, and that's not a big deal. But you still have to buy laundry soap. You still have to go to the laundromat. And if you're going to the laundromat, it's not cheap. It's expensive. Most of you are probably still covered on your parents' insurance. But if you're not, you need to be setting aside money. You won't use it every month, but there might be a month when you have to go to the doctor two times, and they're going to say, I need at least $50 right now. So you put back, put it over into that slush fund. There may be some months that you don't use it. Sometimes you don't use it 3, 4, 5 months. But then when you do need it, you've got it. This also where I've got the drugs. You're living here at college. You need cough syrup. Mom's in Longview. Cough syrup. Have you bought a bottle of cough syrup lately? It's about $8. It adds up. Yeah, it's about $8. And that's for the Equate brand, too. That's for the Equate brand. Robitussin's about $13. Those things that you take for granted because when you're at home and you can run a mom's medicine cabinet and grab, you got a budget for those things. Doesn't take much, but you can very easily go in and spend quite a bit of money when you get sick just getting the necessities. Then you get down here into the section that's called personal, and a lot of people get confused with the personal because they get a need and a want confused. What do you think a need is? What's a need? Can be. Those are necessities. Okay. What's a want? Well, you got to have clothes because that could be a need also. Okay. What kind of toothpaste do you use? What kind of shampoo do you use? Okay, Herbal Essence. Now, if you go to the grocery store and you really, really need some shampoo, and Herbal Essence is $5 and you've got $3 in your pocket. Now, they've got Suave for 99 cents. Okay? Do you see where I'm going with this? The difference between a want and a need? You really want the Herbal Essence because you like the way that it works. But you need some shampoo, and you can afford that Suave. So you spend the 99 cents. Defining the difference between a need and a want is huge. There are things that you need, toiletry items, toothpaste, shampoo, and you might want the most expensive brand. But you might have to get the lesser brand because of your budget restraints at the time. In this column, you even budget for your haircuts. Even if you guys are going to Supercuts once every 4 to 6 weeks, by the time you tip, even if you get the basic haircut, it's $14. Okay, and if you tip your hairdresser, you're going to spend about $20. Most guys, I know the guys in my family go between every 4 to 6 weeks, so we budget $20 a month per male in the household. Females, this does not apply to you because our hair costs a whole lot more than theirs. We have to give up other things. Okay, sometimes my hair money has to come out of my blow money where I'm not held accountable for it. Okay. You see this bottom column down here where it says blow? That's your money to do with what you want to do that you don't have to be accountable to your spouse, to your boyfriend, to your girlfriend. That's your money for you to do with what you want to do. Then you add up this page. The first time you do this, Just take it with you when you go to the grocery store, or take a notepad with you and write down what you're spending on these items. You'll be amazed at what you're spending in this column. It takes about 90 days to get used to filling out a budget. And then when you get used to it, it goes really fast. On the last page, which I hope that you guys don't have a lot of. This is a bad page. This is a page we want to get rid of, except for the top part, the entertainment and vacation. We budget for entertainment, okay? Because it's real easy to have a family of four go to the movies and drop about $60 if you go to an evening movie, okay? That's not going out to dinner beforehand. So we budget for entertainment, and that's a hard one for our family. So we get an envelope, and we write entertainment on it. And every 2 weeks, we put our entertainment money in there. If there's something that our family wants to do, we go to the entertainment envelope. Okay, can we do this? Yeah, but we won't do anything for the rest of the 2 weeks, or for the rest of the month. Or we decide we want to save it because there's something really big coming up. Vacations are big for our family because all of our family lives far away, so we budget a certain amount each month so that when we go home, that we can go home and enjoy it, because a trip home for us costs about $1,000 every time we go home. It's something that's important to us. We budget it. All of these things are the bad guys, and they're what you want to get rid of. You don't want anything over here. Your visas, your credit cards, Discover, rooms to go, errands, what's that? It's a guy place. It drives me nuts. The HDTV place. Circuit City? Best Buy, that's the one. Yeah, that doesn't need to be on here. You don't need a credit card for Best Buy. Get rid of it. Credit line and student line. You know, girls, we have our weaknesses. You know, it's called American Eagle, Abercrombie, different things. Guys, it's Best Buy. It's the Best Buy list. Okay? When you total all of these three pages up, and it tells you on here how to do that, and you add up what you have coming in each month, this bottom line should have a zero on it. It's called a zero-based budget. That means you spend your money on paper each month, every month, before it comes in. Because if you don't spend it on paper first, it's real easy just to go right through your fingers and you won't know where it went or what you spent it on. But if you account for every dollar that comes into your house, it makes it so much better, because then you can look back and you can say, oh, why can't I do this? Oh, this is why I can't do it. Makes your life a lot easier. Once you guys get on a budget, okay, here's you some extra points on this project that you've got coming up. Define what an emergency is. The brown chair, I don't know your name. What would constitute an emergency for you and your wife?
Anything you didn't expect to happen that happened, that was like that you needed to be taken care of, like a medical emergency, struggling somewhere or another, or if the toilet overflowed and the car fell, one thing that might be covered by our insurance.
Okay. That costs you money. Yeah. That's why you have an emergency fund and not a Visa card. If you have an emergency fund, then you have to decide what's an emergency and what's an inconvenience. Right now, in my emergency fund, I have a certain amount of money. And if I go out there and I have a flat tire that can't be fixed and I have to buy a new flat tire, is that an emergency or an inconvenience? It's an inconvenience. Depending on your financial situation, it could be an emergency. For me, it's an inconvenience at this point in my life. Now, 10 years ago, when I was 35, it would have been an emergency. It would have been a reason for me to dip into that emergency fund, okay? Define what would constitute an emergency for each one of you. And if you have a partner, an accountability partner, which you will need, get them to hold you to it, because otherwise you just start dipping into your emergency fund for anything. But if you define what constitutes an emergency and only take money out for that reason, then when you really do have an emergency, you're in a much better position to handle it. And you don't have to go ask mom, which is a good thing. If you're looking at this, and some of you are, some of you aren't, that's okay too. Enjoy your candy. And you say, whoa, I see some areas that cause me concern. I'm already in trouble. I'm already living beyond my means. My advice is to sit down and do your budget. Get into a really good church that has a financial peace program. Or get with a group here and go through the program together. And find an accountability partner. Someone who's going to say, okay, here's a copy of my budget. I can't spend more than what's on here. And they help you to stay accountable to yourself. Okay, much like Christians do in our daily walks. We hold each other accountable. You need a Christian accountability partner when it comes to finances. Because it's real easy to not stay on track. Now this is the fun part. How many of you in here have debt? Okay. I'm going to show you how to make it go away. And it's not the fastest thing in the world. It does take time. It takes being on a budget. But it's very doable. I'm just going to tape this up. She asked for visuals this year. She's got visuals. I left my. We'll see if it'll stay up. Yeah, I was just trying to straighten it because it was that's. Yeah, that little OCD part of me. It's got to be. Can't hang with the not being straight. Do you have a yellow or a highlighter anywhere? Does anyone? Okay, that works. I'll use a. That's okay. I'll use one of these things. Okay, this is something called the debt snowball. And if you look on that page that you guys are not supposed to have anything on, page 63, this is the page you're not supposed to have anything on, but if you do have stuff on it, to get out of debt, the first thing you need to do is make a list of your debts from the smallest to the largest. I don't care if you only owe mom $5. It's a debt. You owe her. Put it on your list. Start with the smallest and go all the way down to the largest. Okay? Write down what the minimum payment is. Mom, it doesn't really have a minimum payment. We normally don't. But make yourself a minimum payment. If she's your smallest debt, put her down for $5. Okay? Once you have your minimum payment, and I started on here. I said I owed mom $10. That my monthly payment was $10, and my total payoff was $10. So I'm going to put my $10 up there that I owe mom. I owe Maren back there $30. So I'm going to take my $30. Visa. My payoff on that one's only $100. They want $30. They want it. I don't know if they're going to get it all this month, but they want it. For those of you impulsive types who have an overdraft loan payment from your bank where you kind of forgot to write those debits down, that payment's $30. You're up to $300 on that debt. And see, the sneaky thing about the banks is they'll get the money. They'll debit it out whether you know, first time you make a deposit. Doesn't matter if you're going to write the power bill. If you owe them, they'll debit it out. Oh, there's that other Visa payment. You owe them $40. Notice I made these nice round numbers so I could add easily. Sears. Most students have a Sears card because they're the first person that'll give you a credit card. And you get that so that you can get that Visa or that MasterCard, whether you use it or not. But most people will, when they get out, they'll go to Sears and they'll get their washer and dryer so they don't have to go somewhere else. So that payment's $40. Girls. And, well, I guess this one could be guys, too. American Eagle, you got that card because, you know, you really like their clothes. They're cool. And when they have sales, you go in and get them. You really like American Eagle because, let's see, that's your Visa. About $850 is what you're in American Eagle for. The average college girl in credit card debt to clothing companies is about $1,200. Guys is about $800. No, but you go in and you buy gifts for your girls. Not all guys, but that's on average. That's on average. I'm glad, but you would be, so the average is about $1,200. Okay. Now, for those who moved out on their own, they think they need to live just like mom lived all this time, and they wanted brand new furniture. They didn't want to go down to Goodwill and get something. So they went to Rooms to Go and got you a nice bedroom suit, rented that. Your payment's about $100. But by the time they add all the interest and stuff in, you're paying about $1,800. One, two. There's my $100. I'm running out of money here. You know that happens. Those little payments start to add up. Okay. I have to go back up here because I'm running out of my room down here. Finance company. That's because you have all these other debts up here and you couldn't make your ends meet, so you went down to easy loans and you borrowed enough money to get you through a couple of months, and now you got to pay them back too. They're really high interest and they want a lot of money. I only have $80 left. They want $150. What am I going to do? That's exactly what a lot of people do. Say your answer again. Visa card. And guess what? The vicious cycle starts all over again. The reason that we have everyone do a debt snowball, and these are very realistic of debts, okay? Only have $80 left. Now, granted, before I could even get to page 63, I had to cover page 1 and 2 first because I had to put a roof over my head. Okay, I actually have a lot of money here to apply to this last page. Most people, by the time they get to this point, don't have nearly this amount of money, and there are several on this page that don't get paid. So what we have you do is you do your debt snowball. Then you get on the phone and you call everybody and you say, "Hey guys, look, I messed up. I'll pay you what I can as soon as I can. Send them a copy of your budget and say, I'm really working to get out of this mess." Communication is key. If you let them know, if you call them, then they won't be calling you every single night when you get home and are trying to study. Call them. "I'm working on it. You're on my list to pay. I will pay you." Send them a copy of your budget. The first month, let's say you only have $10 to knock on this list. You pay mom off. That bill's gone. You don't need it anymore. You get to mark mom off of your list. But you have this $10 and you still owe lots of people. Well, I'm not going to take it down here and put it on this finance company that's $150. I'm going to take it, the $10 that I had that's in my budget, and I'm going to take that $10 and I'm going to apply it to my friend. And I wrote the wrong amount there. That I owe $30 to. Well, I had the money for that one. So I paid her off, and I still had $10. I add that to what I've got going to Visa. Now my Visa's $40. Okay? I've been able to knock off of my list my friend, because she's paid off now. And I paid $40 now instead of the 30. That leaves me with only $60 left on the Visa. Okay? So next month, when I redo all of this, here's the money that I have now. One big chunk, instead of putting it through everything, I add it to my Visa. So instead of sending Visa $30, how much am I going to send them? How much have I paid off? 40 plus my 30, which is going to be how much? How much do I owe them? 60. So what am I going to do with that other 10? Put it towards my bank loan. Okay? The big part of this is that each month, as you go down, you're applying a bigger chunk of money and you're marking them off. The emotional release of marking this off is huge. Most people will start with the bottom number, with the largest number, because they think, oh, that's the most interest. Yeah, it is. But you never get paid off, because it's just like setting goals. You have to start with the smaller things first. And you work your way down. By the time you get down here, 40, 70, 100, 140, 180, 210, 220, plus the 100 you're already paying them, how long will it take you to get that 1,800 paid off? Not long. Not if you're giving them $320 a month. When it's done, you take that $320 a month and you drop it down to the finance company. Okay? You keep it in your budget. You keep spending it. And all of that, your debt snowball is just rolling downhill. You're eliminating debts. By the time you get down to here, at here we were at 320. 470 plus the 200 you're already paying them. If you're paying your student loan $670 a month and you've been budgeting for it, how long do you think you're going to owe on that student loan? Not long, okay? Once this page is knocked out, you have all of this money, this big snowball of money. It's no longer on this page. So you take this money and you go back to these other pages and you say, what would I do? How do I want to spend this money? Okay? You decide how you want to spend this money on this piece of paper before you change anything with this wad of money. Does that make sense? Does anybody have any question about that? Yes? The is Financial Peace by Dave Ramsey. It's the name of the book. You can listen to him, I believe, from 1 to 4 on the talk radio station here in Dallas. I never get to hear him because I'm always in class. But it's You can also listen to him live on the web, www.daveramsey.com, or you can Google Financial Peace. Okay? The other thing that you start doing with this money is you're driving a clunker. Now that you have all this money, you have car fever really, really, really bad, and you think you deserve that new car. Forget it. Pay yourself a car note, and when you've got about $1,500 in the bank, sell the car you've got, take the $1,500 that you've allotted for a car payment, add that to the $800 or $900, if you're lucky, that you got for the car you're driving now, and you buy yourself about a $3,000, $2,000 car that you paid cash for. Continue paying yourself a car note and trade up. You're earning interest on your money. Either way you go, the car is going to depreciate in value. So why not earn the interest on your money instead of paying it and losing the value of your car? It took my husband and I nearly 10 years to get to that point. A month ago? How long have I had my car? Month and a half. Just bought a brand new car. Went in and wrote a check for cash for that car. Felt really good. Drove my Toyota. Had 180,000 miles on it. 98 Toyota Camry. Still runs. Passed it down to my daughter. She's grateful to have it. It doesn't have a car note attached. Okay, now instead of paying a finance company money for a car note, I'm still paying a car note, but I'm paying it to myself, and I'm earning interest on it. Have I blown you guys away, or has anything I've said made sense to any of you? Does anybody have any questions? I have couple of pieces of paper for you. One of them I gave you. It's a quick way to do your budget after you do that. Being a visual person, when we did our family's debt snowball, we literally wrote every debt that we had down on a piece of poster paper, and we wrote the total payoff. We wrote it on a piece of poster paper, and then we put it in a ledger so that we could hang on to it and see what we were, where we were. And I like this ledger because it's a year at a glance. If you write your debts down and then you list it each month, you can see how it shrinks, and then you'll see, you know, how it dies off. And I brought this if anybody wants to take a piece of this. It's really good. But I would very much suggest putting your debts, if you have them, on a piece of poster paper, big bold letters. And each month, as you pay something off, get a highlighter and mark that puppy off, because you will get the biggest relief of saying, yes, I killed it. It's not there anymore. And then when you get down here and you're like, oh, man, this feels good, and you can look back and see exactly how far you've come. My husband and I still have our original debt snowball that we did about 10 years ago, and it's frightening to look back at it, but at the same time we can look back at it and see how far we've come. Okay, you're in a dorm room, you may want to do something along the lines of this where you list them and just kind of check them off, but you need something visual that you can mark off. Does anybody have any questions, comments?